Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
The following podcast is a member of the Great Big Owl family.
Hello, welcome back to Smash Pod. This is part two. If you want to hear part one, why not go back and listen to that? In the meantime, here's part two. I hope you enjoy. I really do. So, Finn and Poe escape.
Yes.
As you were mentioning earlier with the tethered...
And they don't kiss.
Tie-fire. They don't kiss. But I like that... You know, you were mentioning earlier about the ideas, things he was having with the tethered TIE fighter. I like that the TIE fighter noise slowly whirs into a crescendo as it goes to take off. Because you just assume that's it going really fast. But I like the way it's going... That's good.
It's great. I mean, the sound design throughout... Like the art direction is just gorgeous. They've put a lot of very, very talented people on this and given them a lot of money to make it really lovely.
Although, to be fair, with the TIE fighters, they've just gone, what if the square bits on the end were white instead of black?
Yes, that's true. I mean, well, there is that. But, I mean, they've recreated them, I suppose. Yeah. And they've, again, with the warming up sound, that's great.
Yeah. But, yeah, as I say, they don't kiss. Poe gives Finn his name, because his name up to that point is FN2187.
That's right, yes.
He says, yeah, I like being called Finn. Thanks.
Yep.
I'm not quoting from the film there.
I think that is more or less it.
More or less.
Yeah, I mean, have you thought about writing one of these, John?
Oh, I'd love to, you know.
Yeah, me too. Let's do it together.
Especially with your comebacks and my dialogue.
No, you are. We'll go up to Kathleen Kennedy. Say we've got two demands. Right. Every single zinger has to be met with the other character saying, no, I'm not. Yeah. And also Boba Fett helmet upside down, flowers planted in it.
And Han Solo's balls explode.
Yeah, at one point, at a crucial moment. He's back to life. We've resurrected him like Emperor Palpatine, but to have his balls blow up. He doesn't even say any lines.
You say that, but I won't tell you.
Okay. Yeah. Han Solo comes back and his bollocks blow up in The Rise of Skywalker.
He is, isn't it?
And everyone goes, yeah, you're right. It is bad that there's a black stormtrooper. And you go, no, it's more the balls exploding that was an issue for me personally.
And we're going to call it episode 9.5.
Yeah, episode 9.5.
I don't want to go all the way to 10 yet.
You know, I think...
There's more story to tell.
We're going to call it episode 9.5, The Smell of Fear.
Yeah, yeah. There you go.
Perfect.
The smell of First Order.
The smell of First Order. The smell of Donald Gleason's nerves.
So Finn wakes up on his own with Poe's jacket.
Yep.
And watches as the TIE fighter sinks into the Kelvin Flats, because JJ has to put the word Kelvin in everything.
Is that a thing he likes?
He does. It was his. I think it was his grandfather's name.
Oh, that's nice. That's very sweet.
So if you watch any JJ Abrams film or TV show or anything, there's always a mention of the word Kelvin. In Super 8, I think the supermarket where the monster attacks at the beginning is called Kelvin.
That's nice. Now, my mother is from Oregon in the States, and she went to take a trip and visit family there quite a few years ago now, and she sent back, this is sort of in the early days of her understanding that you can take photos on your phone.
Right.
About 5-10 years later than everybody else realized this.
Sure.
And one of the few photos she sent back via email to me from this trip was a picture of a big general store, like next to a big highway, which said Wanker's Corner Grocery Store.
Hey!
Because there is a town in Oregon called Wanker's Corner. So I think that with the family connection, the sort of sentimental family connection thing, that would be the phrase that I would get into every film.
Yeah.
the mate, it's like, watch out over there because that's the wanker's corner quicksand that you'll sink into if you're not careful.
Fucking Tom Crowley, since he's been the showrunner on Doctor Who, every episode.
Wanker's corner. Oh, sorry. That's the wanker's corner bell going off. That means that the TARDIS is sad.
The chameleon chip's broken again, so we will have to go to Wanker's Corner and get it fixed.
No, it turns the chameleon chip breaks again more than before, and the TARDIS becomes the Wanker's Corner grocery store.
Oh, I hate this series.
Do you hate it more than it is now, though?
Bring back Chibnall.
Oh, God, I've never been so insulted. Sorry, that's not fair, is it? I'm sure he's very good.
He wouldn't put Wanker's Corner and everything, though.
No, that's true, he wouldn't. He doesn't have the guts to do that. That's why I'm a really good writer, is the sheer brass balls on me.
Well, watch this space for Tom Crowley's Doctor Who, everybody. Now, I've got a problem with this scene, right, where Finn meets Rey. Now, I've got no problem with the fact that Rey can fly a spaceship. Absolutely okay. No problem. What right. I don't like is that because of these Mary Sue accusations that came along at the time, mainly from sex-offending screenwriters.
Yes.
It doesn't help itself, and I've also got a thing about Doctor Who with this as well, but it doesn't help itself that when he says to her, have you flown this thing before?
Yes.
She says no, and then starts flicking every single switch and then taking the, you know, starting the ship. I think all they had to do is her to say yes.
There's a similar scene with Luke, isn't there, where he says, oh, it's almost the same as a 2-1 Skyhopper or whatever. Like he sort of says, oh, the controls are basically the same.
Yeah, but he has that line in there to cover that.
To show that he does it. Yeah, exactly.
He doesn't say, I've never flown this before.
Maybe this is, they took a leaf out of my book and he said, and you know, much like the comebacks, like, yeah, no, yeah. I'm not.
Yeah.
Then the comeback her there is like, nope.
Yeah.
Can you fly this thing? And in a previous Star Wars, there might have been some sort of witty riposte, like a, what do you think I'm doing? Or something like that.
Mm.
But in this, she goes, no. Mm. And that's the witty comeback they settled on.
It annoys me every single time because I just think, if they'd have just had her saying, yes, but not for years, or something like that.
Yeah, or like, it's basically the same as my speeders controls, whatever.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Then you'd be like, okay, fine. But I know...
To talk about the character of Rey, sorry for cutting you off. I wanted to go back to what you were saying about the Mary Sue accusations. Mm. I thought a Mary Sue was like a sort of an author insertion of themselves into a story.
Well, Matt, the screenwriting sex offenders accusation was...
Have they got a podcast, by the way? Because that sounds really good.
I don't think anyone would listen to it now. I think
recorded from LA County Jail, it's the Sex Offending Screenwriters podcast.
Where his dad should have been. No, I'll cut that out. no, his accusation was this: she's literally good at everything.
Yeah,
like everything she touches, she's amazing at. Which, by the way, James Bond is the same, but because he's a man, it's fine.
Well, I'm with you on that. I think it's sort of, but also she's, you know, she has the Force about her, so it's almost like going, she's a bit special, isn't she? She's got something kind of amazing about her. And then when you find out, oh, she's sort of, you know, she's another Anakin or another Luke, you go, yeah, that makes perfect sense.
Exactly. I accept it I accept it definitely, and I've got no problem with it. As I say, I just don't think they help themselves with that particular line reading.
Because
people, thick people will go, well, how's she going to be flying the spaceship if she's never flown it before?
Yeah, well, I mean, you make a good point, John.
Also,
with Doctor Who.
In Doctor Who, her first appearance, when she regenerates, she immediately falls out of the TARDIS, which led to millions of people going, women can't drive.
Yes.
I just thought, again, you're not helping yourself.
No, that's a good point. I think also, I think that was, that's a joke which, yeah, I mean, you're right, it's terrible, isn't it? You're trying to define the first female Doctor. Also, then, at the beginning of Series 11 of Doctor Who, the TARDIS is found within 2 episodes, and it's not even that big a deal.
Yeah.
So you do start to ask yourself, well, hang on, why was it completely obliterated at the end of the previous series in a misjudged moment, which led to loads of sexist ammunition being given to arseholes on the internet?
Yeah.
Anyway, that's another question. I think this is a separate podcast.
Yeah.
One which you and I will record, and then I'll never release for fear that it might professionally damage me.
Yeah, and I'll never listen to it either.
No, good. All right, perfect. Yeah. It's a deal.
Great.
That's a blood pact.
Exactly. Which we can't do because we're in isolation. But
I'll post you some blood.
Perfect. And I'll post some blood on the internet.
Good.
I don't know what that means. So they're escaping the Millennium Falcon.
Yes, lovely.
Yeah, lovely ship.
I like the bit, however, as opposed to the line with, can you drive this? No, I can't. Here I am driving it. Mm. In an opposite way, I really like the bit where they go, let's take that really ace spaceship, and it explodes immediately. They go, oh, let's take the shit one. And then it's the Millennium Falcon. Yeah, I thought that was a really nice moment.
It's a great joke. I love it.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And they take off, and then Simon Pegg comes running out and goes, hey, that's mine! If I was a director, I'd go, I know they're mates. I'd go, Simon, could you just do that again, but better?
Yeah, well, no, I think it's, you know, it's sold as a sort of hammy moment to me. I think there are so many questions with a character like that where you go, is he in the suit? Mm-hmm. If not, who is? Is he ADRing to an effect that's already been generated, or was he there just shouting at an indiscriminate level? Anyway, I hesitate to criticise because I think I would find that very strange to judge.
Yeah, yeah, true. But they get away, they go off into space. And then they get captured by a big spaceship, which it turns out Han Solo is now flying around in a car park.
Yeah, it's like a sort of, it's like a scrap kind of chomping mouth that just flies around the universe.
Yeah.
I would say, now, you know, there's a lot of fun to be had here in the next several minutes of this film. Mm-hmm. I would have said that this, if you take my theory of cutting half an hour, I think this segment would probably be the first to go.
Absolutely.
And I think the clue to that is that there's this giant action sequence, which is very entertaining. And I like the ball alien. That's cool. That's fun and weird. Mm-hmm. Not very Star Wars-y. All feels slightly odd and from a different film, but it's an entertaining segment. Mm-hmm. And then as soon as that's all done and they've all buggered off in the Millennium Falcon, the Scottish guy, who I can't remember who he is, he's from something.
Yeah.
He's on the opposite team to the crew from the raid.
Yeah.
He looks out the window of the spaceship and says, tell the First Order that we found their droid and it's on the Millennium Falcon. And literally that is the only part of the scene that's required for the story.
Well, isn't this also to introduce the fact that Rey's really good at doing electrical things?
Oh, is it? Right.
Because she shuts all the doors. She releases the Rathtars by accident.
Well, I hadn't got... Yeah, yeah.
Also, one of the baddies are called Kanja Club, which made me just think of Boy George immediately.
Kanja Club, yeah.
Yeah.
Kama.
Also, you talk about Harrison Ford being good in this, and I agree, largely he is.
Yes.
He has a terrible line reading here.
Absolutely. Tell me about it.
It's embarrassing.
Would you say that to his face, John?
I would.
Right, okay. Well, would it surprise you to find out that he's here with me now?
It would.
Hey, John, I can't do it. It's very hard to do a good Harrison Ford impression.
Harrison, your voice... Oh, it's you again. Sorry,
that was me. It was me the whole time, John. You were flummoxed.
Fucking hell.
I've lampooned you.
But... it doesn't make sense because they say, you know, these two people, Kanja Club and the Scottish Mafia.
Yes.
The Muck Mafia.
The Muck Mafia.
I've boarded your car park.
Yeah.
What are we going to do? And he says, you guys hide down there. And she says, what about the droid? And he says, oh, keep it with me and I'll sort it out. I'll let you know when they're gone. And then she says, what are you going to do? And he goes, same thing as I always do, talk my way out of it. And then Chewbacca roars, and then he does it. And then, as Chewbacca roars at him, he turns back into classic Han Solo and goes, yes, I do, every time. I thought, brilliant. Do that line before again, please, because you literally
went... that second one,
same thing I always do, Tom, I'm out of it.
At a sort of a... The first line, he was at a kind of a David Hare kind of level of energy, where it's like miserable people in the living room just sort of, you know, mumbling to each other.
Which he has a tendency to fall into.
Yeah, and then then Chewbacca reminded me, oh, Star Wars, yeah, I remember now. And then he
even does the finger pointing. He does the finger pointing. Yes, I do.
Every time. Yeah, it's good that. I mean, listeners at home can't see this, and nor can John at the other end of the phone line, but I just did it.
I did it as well.
Good, so imagine us both pointing at nothing
and
saying, yes, I do, every time.
Yeah, but now you're sounding like Jimmy Durante.
Hinky dinky do, ha 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 ha
ha. So anyway, they get away and then they go and see after that we get Kylo Ren meeting Snoke, who's our new Emperor Palpatine, essentially.
Snoke, otherwise known as, might as well be a big empty chair.
Yeah, or as I call him, the Cosmic Wilfred Bramble.
He does look a bit like a dirty old man. Yes, he does look like famous dirty old man Wilfred Bramble.
But as you say, complete waste of time.
I think I would have much preferred it if he did sound like Wilfred Bramble.
Yeah.
There is something very curiously British about Star Wars, and obviously it's because it was, you know, a low budget film shot in Elstree, so they just got whoever they could get.
Yeah.
But that has been retained in a really nice way.
I like it.
Except that John Boyega is American. And I assume that's just because they went, well, we've already got one British goodie, we can't have two.
Yeah.
That would be confusing.
Yeah.
So and I thought that's a shame though, because John Boyega's like, I find his sort of his usual accent really charming. And
also, why not have Poe doing an accent? Because you know what's really refreshing about Rogue One is that Cassian Andor.
Yes,
has got that accent. Lovely sort of Mexican lilt to his voice.
Yes, I mean he's a gorgeous man as well. Diego Luna, is that his name?
Brilliant, isn't he?
Rogue One is ace. I love Rogue One.
It's a masterpiece.
Yeah, and Riz Ahmed, another bit of cracking British totty in Hollywood.
Yeah,
that was good news. And lovely accents. Accents in Star Wars. I mean, it doesn't make sense because, you know, I mean, then why is Doctor Who northern? Lots of planets have a north. I mean, these are the same questions we've been asking for years.
You mean northern?
Northern. Yeah, that's right. Yes. Everyone at home will get that reference.
They won't at all. I'll have to edit
it
out.
It's fine. It's fine.
Tom, just cretin. The context is that Tom did a wonderful little video of all the Doctor Who's in 60 seconds.
I don't think I set myself a time limit. It was just every single Doctor impersonated, mostly in one word or maximum four.
Every single Doctor impersonated. Jamie.
Joe.
Romana.
He's sort of like, which one's this again? Ace, you cretin.
Hi, I'm Paul McGann.
Whoa.
Northern.
Well.
Posh.
You are a funny.
Brilliant. You're welcome.
I retweet it a lot, so if you follow me, you've probably seen it.
If you follow John Rain at Mr. Ken Shabby on Twitter, you'll see that being retweeted roughly every 3 days, which is something I hugely appreciate from John. I encourage him to keep doing it.
It does make me laugh. I'm sorry, I can't hide that fact. It cheers me up at dark times.
I think it is the best thing I've ever done.
Yeah, I agree. Because everything else you've done is shit.
Terrible.
Absolute shit, honestly.
It's a wonder you let me on the programme.
I know. I felt sorry for you.
I just had a shit just now. Stinks.
Snoke, then.
Snoke. Speaking of steaming piles of stinky shit.
Speaking of shit, as it later turns out, is Palpatine.
Oh, is he?
Yeah.
Oh.
He's a clone of Palpatine.
I mean, he's basically the same character, so he might as well do that. Like, but that's not a kind of Scooby-Doo, ha-ha! That's more of a kind of a sighing resignation of like, yeah, I guess he is him.
Yeah, yeah.
Because he may as well be him, so why not?
Yeah. And the best thing about episode 9 is when Kylo Ren at the beginning goes to see Palpatine, he walks past this canister full of used Palpatine, used Snokes. There's like three of them piled on top of each other.
One of them Wilfred Bramble in an amusing in-joke?
Yeah. He's going, oh, Arnold.
Don't have a go at that horse. Don't have a go at that Tauntaun. That Tauntaun do anything. That Tauntaun's kept us in business.
Exactly that. But so Andy Serkis doing the voice. He does a good job, I think. He's just...
Oh, is it Andy Serkis? I mean, he's so nondescript. I literally...
He's better in The Last Jedi, to be fair. That scene in the throne room is very good.
Yeah, that's quite good. I remember that. That's fun. I mean, I do remember sort of going, oh, he's a character. Because in this, you sort of... It's odd because you don't need him because you've already got General Hux, Donald Gleeson, looking a bit confused.
Mm.
You've got Kylo Ren as the more sort of wild-cardy, Darth Vader-esque,
you know, Captain Sith Phasma presence. That we didn't even mention as well.
Captain Phasma. I actually really like her in this because she's a perfect, you know, she's the... drill sergeant for John Boyega, which is quite nice.
Yeah.
And like the bit where she goes, I'm going to send your blaster in for inspection.
Mm.
Is this a really nice indirect threat? I really liked that. And it's Gwendolyn Christie, isn't it?
Yeah.
Behind the shiny armor plates.
Yeah.
And she's just good physical performer. And she just, the vocally, does it really well.
She's great. I think, sadly underused because they don't know what to do with her.
But actually, to be fair, there's that big fight they have in Last Jedi, which is quite nice, where he sort of finally makes his, you know, sticks the knife into his past with Phasma, and that's quite lovely.
Calls himself Rebel Scum.
Rebel Scum. Yeah, I like that. That's good.
It is good. But, anyway, where were we? So then we get Han Solo and Rey and Chewbacca. I don't know why I'm listing them all. Everyone in the Millennium Falcon, go and see Maz. Now, this again, really pisses me off, because Maz is played by...
Lupita Nyong'o,
who is possibly the most beautiful woman in the world.
Right.
Not only that, but a really good actress.
Yes, she's very good, yeah.
And they make her look like an anal bum face woman.
They do. She looks like, you know that thing, that meme people do where they shrink people's eyes and mouths?
Yes.
And then they, you know, like it'll be like Patrick Stewart, Bonadoct Combobot. It's like Moz Conorto. And I like the design. A question my fiance asked that was apposite was, why is she wearing goggles? Don't know. She's
looks
a bartender.
Like she looks like a Minions nan.
She She looks like if you like smoked a minion and hung it yeah. up over in a dry room for a few weeks.
Yeah. That's exactly what she looks like.
She's like if you treated a minion to make a handbag out of it.
There's also a mild insinuation here that she's fucked Chewbacca.
Yeah, there is. Yeah. Oh, well, to be fair, I think that's sort of the flirty older lady character. I think that's, you know... That's
she's like, oh, young man.
Oh. Yeah, yeah.
At our age.
I wouldn't mind him having a look up me 80-80 or whatever. I don't know. Like something like that.
He certainly puts the woo in Wookiee.
He sure does. Yeah. Wouldn't mind him chewing my backer. Oh.
Although, as we've heard in the film Solo, that's too long to say.
Is it?
Have you seen Solo?
I haven't seen Solo yet. There was a cut-off point. I think I'm a good indicator of audiences.
Yeah, yeah.
Where there was a certain point where I got fatigued of new Star Wars coming out.
I wasn't bothered. I like Solo, but there's about three massive stinky clunkers in them. One of them
there's one where his name isn't actually Han Solo.
Well, he says Han. His first name's Han, and he says, "And what's your second name?" And he goes, "Oh, I haven't got one."
Right.
And then he goes, "You're traveling alone." And he goes, "Yeah." And he goes, "Han Solo."
Sure. It's a bit like in the film where, you know, you find out when Indiana Jones first wore a hat and you go, well, I don't really care that much when he first wore a hat. It's more his, you know, character and his emotional development that's interesting. It's like, no, he got a hat off a guy on a train. And you go, sure, that's fine, I guess. And this is why he doesn't like snakes. Maybe he doesn't like snakes because they're poisonous and kill you. No, there was a very specific moment when okay, fine, sure.
I mean, they did cut out the bit where he masturbates for the first time, which I think was wise.
To a pin-up of Princess Leia Organa,
who's
pin-up of the Resistance. Yeah, the Rebellion. Sorry, I get confused.
Yeah, they've been rebranded.
Yeah.
But in Solo, when Chewbacca and Han Solo meet, and Han Solo can speak Wookiee, which is fun. When they meet, he says to him, so what's your name? And Chewbacca roars. And then he goes, Chewbacca, that's too long. I'm just going to call you Chewie. And you're like, we don't need that. That.
So did he invent the concept of pet names in Star Wars universe?
Yeah, he did.
Yeah.
Because obviously...
Until he came along, everyone would have said Luke Skywalker. And then he went, no, I'll call you Luke.
I want him to do that with everybody he meets.
Yeah. Kylo.
Yeah. I'm going to call you Ben instead of Benjamin. Is that all right?
I'm going to call you Jab. That's what got him in trouble with Jabba the Hutt in the first place, was he calling him Jab.
I thought he was talking to Frank Bruno.
Yeah, he was. Now, that was a whole other adventure.
Yeah.
To be documented in Solo 2, The Return of Frank Bruno.
He just goes around the universe thinking up nicknames for people.
Yeah, and then saying them to people he shouldn't, like boxers and wrestlers and, you know,
and then it gets revealed. It gets revealed at the end as the twist that his real first name is Hang Glider.
Hang glider solo press.
I mean, let's be honest. All hang gliders are solo by nature, aren't they? So,
well, they are. Well, you can do that thing where someone rides on your undercarriage, but we won't talk about that now.
That's sexual intercourse.
Sorry. I've been doing hang gliding all wrong. Yeah. Or all right.
All right. Mm. I'll take you to heaven and back, baby.
Or sort of start at heaven and then work our way down.
Yeah, we'd have to get, like all sex, like and hang gliding, you have to start on a big hill and then run off the end.
In many ways, it's the opposite of sex, isn't it? Because the best bit's at the very beginning when you just sort of tip off the edge of a cliff, whereas during sex, you fall off a cliff at the end.
That's right.
Am I doing sex wrong?
I think you are.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, I'll have to watch to find out. So he goes to see Maz and we get some exposition here about... some business, and this is where Finn basically says, "No, refusing the call." The classic Joseph Campbell.
Oh yes, you take the moment. Yeah. Indeed.
So he's going to walk off and go away. In the meantime, Maz's place. Rey hears a noise and follows it, and then finds Anakin's original lightsaber.
All makes sense.
She touches it, we get this nice little flashback sequence, which has a bit of Empire Strikes Back in it. It's got a bit of... We see the Knights of Ren, the terrifying Knights of Ren. I hope we see them again one day and they'll be interesting. No, they won't.
Do we ever see them again ever?
They're in Episode 9 and they don't do anything at all.
Right.
Yeah.
I must say, that was always the case with the Imperial Guard in Return of the Jedi.
Yeah.
They're there to look lovely, and then they never once even flinch. They never move. They're like the Queen's Guard.
Yeah.
You know, they're outside the palace. They just stand there. They do a lot of things. In Star Wars, there's loads of great scenes of like little Jawas like messing with them, because they know they're not allowed to move or talk.
Yes.
But then one of them will like produce his like gun spear and just go, "Stand back in the name of Emperor Palpatine!" And the Jawa goes, "Oh, teeny!" and runs away. And it's jolly good fun. You see the videos online. It's great.
They're brilliant.
But that's the only thing they're good for.
Yeah. Apart from that, do they keep their sandwiches under their helmets?
They do. They do. And now and again, one removes one in an amusing set piece.
Sorry, I'm really stupid. Do they keep their space sandwiches under their helmets?
Ah, yeah. You made a classic blunder there.
I forgot the space prefix
you have to use
in Star Wars. There's also like a cameo from Ewan McGregor in that bit, isn't there?
Yes, there is. That's famously like that's the one link, isn't it, with the prequels? Is he says a line as Obi-Wan?
They managed to get a line of Alec Guinness saying Rey, which I think they managed to chop up some audio, so you got him saying Rey.
Oh wow.
And then as the flashback finishes, you hear someone whisper, "You've taken your first steps," and that's Ewan McGregor.
Lovely. That's nice. I think what they'd done was they found Alec Guinness saying satellite array.
That's right.
And they took out satellite and then Ray was left.
Can't face those Twitter notifications? Forgot to watch anything but Netflix? Dreading the video conference small talk at 9? You need a news vitamin, you know. You need The Smart 7. It's a brand new daily podcast that puts your brain into gear. Everything you need to know in less than 7 minutes. You need The Smarts? Hey, we got The Smarts. The Smart 7, every weekday at 7 a.m. Available right now on Spotify and all the usual places.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
At this point, when they're in the Finn's about to leave, and the First Order, who've been alerted to their presence, as has the Resistance, by the way, the First Order arrive and start shooting.
I quite like that sequence as well. Those little two lines, that's quite nice.
It is very Star Wars, isn't it?
Yeah. Tell the Empire, tell the First Order that they're here, tell the Resistance that they're here. That's quite nice. Anyway.
No, they're not.
No, they're not. And then you go, "No, I've seen them, they literally are." And the guy goes, "You are." Yeah. And then that's.
Could we get someone else on the phone, please?
Yeah.
No.
No. And then they hand it on to somebody else. And she goes, "That was just confusing. He said no, and now I'm talking to you."
Yeah, sorry.
And the other guy goes, because it's a non-human Star Wars character.
He says, I paid for an argument. Oh, I'm sorry. This is abuse.
And then she says, "Third base."
Who? Anyway, so... The first order blow everything up. Ray runs off. Again, Ray freaks out after touching the lightsaber runs off. Kylo Ren comes down. There's a nice sequence where he chases her and then freezes her.
Yes.
And then says, "Oh, you've seen the map. It's all in your head. I'm going to take you instead." Because we're still going on about this fucking map.
Yeah, it sort of works as a sort of, you know, a MacGuffin.
But who fucking cares? Honestly, it's like if there is literally one Jedi, which is what they're, you know, supposing here, who gives a fuck?
This is something that I wondered. I mean, there's a lot of sort of Last Jedi detractors who don't like that moment where Luke just flings a lightsaber over a cliff, and I like that joke. I think that's quite a nice bit.
Yeah,
because he's fed up with it all. Mm. What I don't quite get, as you say, is. He's clearly renounced all of this and feels guilt and doesn't want anything to do with it. So they're all going, "Let's find Skywalker." I suppose what you could say and what they should have maybe made more of is the idea that, you know, bringing back Luke Skywalker's head on a stick would be like the ultimate symbol of victory for the First Order.
Yeah.
You know, but it's never really established. Like, it's hinted at that the Jedi are a myth at this point because it's so long since there's been any of them knocking about. But also that, you know, Han Solo and Luke Skywalker and Leia themselves are almost legendary figures. So you could You could have, you know, Kylo Ren or possibly frightened Donald Gleason saying something, you know, like, I will hang Skywalker's head from the prow of my Star Destroyer, yeah. And then they will know. But as it is, it just sort of feels like it's Kylo Ren's personal beef. It's his sort of the end of his family therapy. He's like, well, I'm off to go murder my uncle.
Or just have some sort of backstory. Give Snoke some sort of backstory where he's, you know, like, the reason he's all fucked up is because Luke Skywalker fucked him up, so he wants to kill him. Something like that.
He was working in that scrapyard that did him, wasn't it?
Absolutely.
It messed his back up.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, God. How have you dirty old man? Yeah.
Yeah. Where do you want the map to Skywalker, Snoke?
In the Kazi.
In the Kazi.
So, anyway, long story short, they kidnap Rey.
Yep.
And Finn gets to do his first shout of Rey here. Mm-hmm. And he also gets called a traitor by a stormtrooper. And bearing in mind, at the beginning, Finn was quite upset about a stormtrooper dying. And by this point, he's literally just shooting all of them.
Well, that's true. I suppose it's like it becomes a life or death struggle, and it's. I think it's the reality of the violence when it first happens. It does feel like something they could have just done a lot more with. You know, this idea that if he's a pacifist, that's a really interesting character to put in a show called Star Wars.
It happens, you know. Tom.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Of course. Yeah. That's right.
Also, they should have a scene like they did in the A-Team remake, where BA became a pacifist, and Liam Neeson as Hannibal Smith. Mm-hmm. Had to sit down with BA and explain to him that Gandhi was a pacifist, but some also great thinkers also shoot guns as well. And then talk him round to shooting guns again.
Yeah, or sort of like the 13th Doctor, who like will smack a gun out of the hand of a young progeny and then say, "But I've got this amazing gas that will like melt flesh off, so we'll use that." And it's like someone has like, you know, one of those sort of potato guns that fires chunks of potatoes, like smack it out of their hand and say, "You're a piece of shit. You're a human piece of shit." And then she'll see somebody off with like a nuclear warhead and go, "That's fine." And it's very consistent. You know, it's very hard line consistency.
Are you still upset because she killed all those spiders, Tom?
I felt so bad for them.
Mm-hmm.
I was so invested in them in that episode. That was the main thing. I assume they were the protagonists.
They were, yeah.
I was going like, "Oh, brilliant. Oh, look at this. Oh, they're about to eat all those people."
Yeah.
But no, then at the end, outrageous, outrageous. "We're going to have them cannibalise each other until the entire species is wiped off the face of the earth, right? But if I see one of you holding a spud gun, I'll fucking kill you." Like, it's that sort of... We need some more clear-cut character development like that in this, I think, from Finn.
I agree. I don't like women either.
God, no! It's one of those shit guys. It's a shit man from Twitter. He's boxed me into a corner.
There's a good bit here. Sorry, I went all high there. There's a good bit here when Rey is being kind of tortured by Kylo Ren.
Yes.
It reminds me a bit, and this may sound weird, but it reminded me a bit of those films where you get a jock forcing himself on a chick.
Yeah.
And I think that's what they're going for. It's this kind of like horrible piece of shit trying to have his way with an innocent woman. And then when she starts resisting and then reads his mind, it's a brilliant scene.
Yeah, it's really nice, yeah. I like that a lot. And I like the bit where he says, "Hey, baby, you fancy going to make out point?" And she says, "No, thank you." And he goes, "That's fine, I respect your boundaries."
And she says, No, you don't.
Yeah. And he says,
"No, I don't."
Because he's been force-tricked, like Jabba the Hutt.
But he tries to get information out of her, he can't, and he gets totally freaked out because as he says to her, you know, "You're a scavenger, you're waiting for these people to come," she then fights back and says, "You're obsessed with Darth Vader." I mean, that's obvious anyway.
Yeah.
And basically just calls him out on his shit.
Yeah.
And he leaves to go and speak to Snoke. Now, this is where our connection comes in, because as she's tied up in this upward table.
This is it. Drum roll.
This is where we meet FN.
We're coming to it.
FN 007.
He's never FN007.
He is.
Oh, my God. Amazing.
Daniel Craig.
Here it is. The reason that we're talking about this right now.
Mm-hmm.
Here he is.
Daniel Craig. And here he is right now. Oh, shit. I got the wrong one.
Hello.
Sorry, Craig.
It's me, Craig Daniel. Welcome to Smash Pod, the podcast about all your wood and tiling needs.
No.
Craig Daniel from Huddersfield Tiling and Roofing Supplies.
No, Craig.
Thanks for having me on, John.
No, Craig,
we've got a special on this week.
Craig, there's been a mix-up. I don't actually need you anymore.
No, you don't.
Oh, see, you've got it. That's good. Thanks.
And then he leaves. Bye, Craig. Yeah.
Bye, Craig. It was nice of him to leave.
It was nice of him to leave peacefully without showing any resistance.
I thought he
the
was
resistance,
gonna...
it all ties together.
It does. I thought he was going to kick off, to be honest, but he was all
no,
right.
No, no, no. It was deemed that that improvisation wasn't worthy enough for continuation.
That just feels a long way to come, though.
It is. I mean, you know, he shouldn't even be outside.
Still, I don't know why you let him in, because there's a lockdown on.
Well, he lives with me.
Oh, okay.
I can't yes and you any further, John. You've absolutely you've skewered the reality I'm trying to create here.
Makes sense now. Anyway, so Daniel, it's brilliant. So Daniel Craig is a stormtrooper called FN007. Yeah, and he gets Jedi mind tricked.
And later on, you get to see him have sex with a cocktail, which is another clever reference for the fans.
Yeah.
Yes, he does. He gets mind tricked, and he's good at it. He's good at it. He sounds like, you know, those classic stormtroopers.
He calls it scavenger scum.
Scavenger scum. Yeah, it's nice. It's nice that. Yeah. It's nicely done. He's force tricked. It's enjoyable. It's quite nice watching her sort of. And also, there's something so lovely. They use the fact that he's, you know, that this is a masked cameo quite well, where it's, you know, it makes absolutely no difference that it's Daniel Craig in no way. I think we can say that safely. But it is quite nice that he's completely unreadable, which increases, like, the amusement of sort of seeing this totally blank expression character slowly get turned by a Jedi mind trick. And it also increases the tension because you have no idea if she's just, like, talking shit and he's not listening.
Yeah.
But it's a lovely little sequence, and I'm sure Craig's very glad to have done it.
Oh, you'd love it, wouldn't you? The first Star Wars film for 30 odd years.
I certainly would. It would be a wonderful opportunity for me to promote my roofing and tiling supply shop.
Sorry, I was talking to Tom.
Oh sorry, I'll pop off the Zoom call.
Thanks.
Back to pornography.
Can I go with Craig?
Yeah, if you like. I mean, we're only about half an hour into the movie, so we're probably going to have to keep going quite a while.
Yeah.
Anyway, yes. Actually, we're getting there. We got to Craig.
He's, and she's kind of like, now she can wander around the ship. Now we cut to Finn and Han Solo. Now a little spaceship lands, and out comes Princess Leia.
Whoa.
Or General Organa, she's called in this.
Yes, I like that. I do.
And she's great in this, as you say. Although there is one moment that always makes me laugh. Which is really mean, is when Han Solo and her hug after he says, "I saw our son."
Yeah.
And he presses her head onto her, and because she's a bit older, and this sounds awful because she's dead now, her face squishes a bit. And I always want a sound effect of kind of that to be there. And I always do it in my own head.
I must say.
I feel bad now because, that sort of thing.
Well, you know, I mean, you know, sometimes we've all had it when you're trying to take a sexy selfie, when you're lying in bed and, you know, you've just, I woke up like this, that sort of thing, hashtag. And then you turn the front facing camera on and your face is sort of smooshed clear across your head.
Yeah.
Because you've not noticed how you were sleeping.
Yeah, you're not noticed how fucking appalling you look.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean you.
Oh, no, I know. And then later in the day, I look in the mirror and think the same thing. And then later that night again. And then when I can't sleep at night because I'm thinking about it.
Mm.
All of that stuff. Oh, my gosh. Hang on. My favorite little glimpse of an actor in this. I really want to mention this.
Oh, yeah. Go on.
And this is when the TIE fighter is trying to take off, but it's tethered.
Yeah.
The guy who says, we better report an unauthorized TIE fighter thing. The sort of the captain or Colonel Kaplan, I think his character's called in it, is the actor Pip Torrens, who is not famous. But he is in two brilliant things, which I recognised him from straight away. He's in the underrated M.R. James Ghost Story for Christmas adaptation, View from a Hill, playing a sort of broke aristocrat. And he's also in Human Nature / The Family of Blood, one of the best Doctor Who two-parters ever, playing a headmaster. And I saw him in that and thought, what a perfect triumvirate. M.R. James, Doctor Who, Star Wars. Amazing.
Wow. Yeah.
Anyway, so that's throwing quite a bit further back into the movie, but let's catch up now again.
Let's catch up now.
With Carrie Fisher smooshing her face into Harrison Ford, as we all would.
As we all would. Now, Finn says, we got to go and get Rey back, because I know stuff. Oh, and he meets up with Poe again. Because at this point, we think Poe's dead. And I think originally he was supposed to have been killed off.
Oh, so he was going to die in the TIE fighter.
Yeah, but they kept him on because they liked Oscar Isaac so much.
That does make sense because they never explain. Well, he explains it here in a very improbable way.
He says, I woke up and you weren't there, buddy.
And he says, I was thrown from the crashing ship. And you go, wait, a ship that was crashing into a planet. And you fell out of it and you survived.
And where did you go? How did you get here?
I wandered off in the desert. Mm. I thought I wouldn't check around the other side of the spaceship that I fell out of.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's a shame, isn't it? I mean, Oscar Isaac is brilliant in everything. Yeah. I think he's sort of become one of my favourite actors.
Agreed, yeah.
Again, for Ex Machina, again, and, basically three brilliant performances in that.
And the Cohen ones, fuck.
Yeah, yeah.
Inside Llewyn Davis. Yeah.
Yes, and just everything he turns up in, you just go, good.
As a person who used to play music, when I see somebody who is clearly very good at guitar and very good at singing, they've kind of got me for life, really.
Right,
Oscar Isaac is that. I mean, he's incredible in that film, acting-wise, but just his performing in that is incredible.
Well, John, have I got a surprise for you?
No.
I can't play the guitar.
Oh. Okay.
But I can say, Ace, you cretin. I've got him back.
See, I've got your mind for life, essentially.
Yes.
So this is where Finn says, I know loads about the new Death Star, which is called Starkiller Base. Nice nod to the fans there, Starkiller.
Yeah, Luke Starkiller. Yeah. That's going to be his name.
Stupid name, though, First Order. What should we call it? Starkiller Base.
Starkiller Base. Well, it kills stars. Well, it kills planets. Planet Killer Base sounds a bit torn, though.
It should be called, like, Titan.
Titan Base. That would be good.
Oh, I like...
What I think...
Wank Sock.
Jizrag Base.
Jizrag.
Blow up the shitty planet land. That's what we're going to call it.
No, it's not.
This is the boardroom scene I wanted to see with all the advertising exec. I wanted to see like a really, really wank like fire festival LA marketing firm brought in by Snoke and Kylo Ren. Mm. And Kylo Ren says, we understand you did fantastic work with the Adidas campaign. And then they go, yeah, so we were thinking like a real sort of a 90s revival vibe for this First Order to kind of, you know, and it's like, what would that entail? It's like, well, we think you got this Starkiller Base. We're going to call it Hawaiian Fresh, you know, stuff like that. Yeah, and they go, like, we'll have to talk about this. And, you know, and that would be, and then I think that would be a much more fun result. I think you're right. I think Starkiller Base is a bit first route.
Yeah.
And I think they should have gone for a Tropical Breeze.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, Papillion Regret.
Papillion Regret is nice. Mm. Oh, Chunky Coconut.
Chunky Coconut.
That would have been good.
Yeah. Orange Lust. Anyway,
that's the name of the video that Craig's watching at the moment.
Good old Craig. I like
good
him.
Old Craig.
I'll have him on next week.
He's not coming on because he's coming on. Anyway, moving on.
He's on the blocks. So Finn says, I used to work at Starkiller Base.
Yeah.
I know everything about it.
Yep.
It's got a weakness. Oh, no, Han Solo says, a little wink to the audience because he says, it's got to have a weakness. It's just another Death Star.
Yeah, I could have sort of done without that, I think.
Yeah, me too.
That's sort of having your cake and eating it. I mean, also everyone always points out like, oh yeah, the Death Star's so great. You can just fire one missile into its obvious weak spot and you go, well, if you watch the film, presumably it's an essential exhaust port without which the entire system would blow up.
Yeah.
And also, they have to fly through like a shitload of lasers and find the one point on a planet-sized trench where they can find this thing. So, to be fair, as sort of crippling weaknesses go, it's not the worst in the world.
Plus, they should have called it the clitoris, right, guys?
Yeah.
Hey?
Am I right, guys?
Yeah. Took loads of men to find it, hey?
Tropical Lust.
Tropical Lust. Coming soon.
Coming soon. To a top shelf of a knockoff cash and carry near you.
Yeah. Lovely. So Han Solo says, right, well, I'm going to go with this fella I've just met and Chewbacca. Mm-hmm. We're going to go to Starkiller Base and we're going to turn off the shields. You can all fly in with your X-Wings. Because Poe, as we've seen, is one hell of a pilot.
He's a hell of a pilot.
I bet that'll come back. Doesn't really, does it?
No, I mean, Finn says it one time.
Yeah.
And then you go, no, he doesn't even know that that's Poe Dameron, his friend.
Yeah.
Not boyfriend.
Not boyfriend.
No.
No.
Look at them both ogling this poster of Claudia Schiffer together.
Yeah, well,
but not together in a weird way.
I'd like to have a wank to that, but not with you watching.
No, exactly. That's what they say. That's the dialogue. And then he says, no, you wouldn't.
Yeah.
And then
they laugh and slap each other on the back.
Yeah, but like hard, so you know it's not a sort of tender graze. It's like an intense impact.
Yeah.
Because men show affection through violence.
They do.
Real men.
Yeah, like really sadomasochistic ones and spunky.
I love you, Dad. Ugh, ow! Yeah.
Anyway, so they go down to the Death Star and they do that. And so they go and they start putting bombs around this bit. I'm being too technical, I know, sorry.
No, I know. They put bombs around a bit, yeah.
Yeah. And then Kylo Ren, he finds out, A, that Rey's escaped, so he's annoyed about that. And then he knows his dad's there, he can sense him.
Mm.
And then he wanders around, and then as he's walking around the bit, he walks on this giant walkway that doesn't seem to go anywhere for no reason.
Mm.
And then Han Solo thinks, well, this will be an ideal time for me to reconcile with my long-lost son.
Yeah. I did sort of think... One thing I quite liked about that... I mean, yeah, obviously, you know, maybe when you're on a walkway, you know, with some railings, that would have been a good time to do it.
Mm.
But I also sort of think... I kind of believed it partly because he sees Leia again and she basically says to him, promise me you'll do everything you can to try and bring him back. Mm. And he sort of... it's a nice bit of acting because you sort of just see him crumble and you know that he so loves him still and he's been trying to tell himself he can turn away from him and he just can't do it.
Mm.
I find that quite moving. And yeah, again, just like a railing or a low wall nearby,
yeah.
That would have been good. But as it is, I go, sure. And also, you know, it's Star Wars, so any emotional confrontation has to happen on a narrow gangway over a huge drop that's there for no clear reason.
This bit is good, though. Good writing, good acting, I think.
Yeah, it is,
That, I know what I have to do, but I don't know if I've got the strength to do it.
Yeah, and if I can help you, I'll help you.
They're kind of at cross purposes, like in a Two Ronnie sketch.
Exactly. It's like David Renwick wrote this.
Yeah. Because Kylo Ren is, in fact, talking about murdering his own dad to solidify his position with Snoke.
Yeah.
Whereas Han Solo is talking about going home for a cake.
Yeah, and actually... Kylo Ren's talking about handles for forks. But he's misunderstood, so he stabs him in the stomach.
Yeah, it's great. When he kills Han Solo, it is great.
It's great, and it's really like, that was such a kind of... Because I was watching this film, I think someone may have even tweeted, like, before Force Awakens even came out, like, oh, I can't wait to watch all of my beloved childhood characters getting killed. And it was like, that is the sort of thing that would happen. And then throughout this film, I was going... Oh, God, please no, please not. Don't kill Chewbacca. Just leave Chewbacca, please. Mm. Oh, not Leia. Not Han Solo. And that was a real, like, I think even when I saw it in the cinema, there was an audible kind of, oh, from the audience. Like, the bereavement of it was really, felt really real.
And then he gets shot by Chewbacca
and
then chases Rey and Finn out into some woods.
Yeah.
And this bit's quite good as well, I think.
It is nice. I mean, there's so many nice bits, really. It's sort of, it's a strange thing where clearly a lot of talented people who love Star Wars worked on it.
Mm.
But it's just that kind of slight... And again, this is a result of the carefully managed franchise situation.
Mm.
And it's the same instinct that we'll have, you know, Poe and Finn agreeing that a Claudia Schiffer poster is nice.
Yeah.
You know, it goes into, you know, oh, we've created this character who's like a great rebel pilot hero, and it's a great role because he dies heroically really early on, but it's really impactful.
Mm.
And it's like, oh, no, the character's too good, bring him back.
Mm.
And then it's that odd thing where you're trying to balance all these characters that are there either because they're plot crucial or they've proven popular or they seem to sort of round out the balance of the cast in a wider sense. But then you have to keep juggling them all and finding reasons for them to do stuff. And it's the reason that Finn is underused, because he's a great character, but because it's become the conclusion of what they're now calling the Skywalker saga, you know, and all of this. It's like, no, suddenly Finn's really interesting arc of being, you know, a fascist, you know, programmed child to being a hero of the resistance is sort of sidelined a bit, even though it's more interesting than, you know, the chosen one coming back.
Yes.
You know, it's all this sort of thing. And I think there is a sort of sense of, When you try and hero's journey it to death, you start to end up like shaving off loads of interesting. You shave off lots of rough edges, but by doing so, you've left lots of weird, incomplete things in there that clearly at one point meant something, but now have sort of just become these strange hanging threads. As you mentioned, like the Knights of Ren or whatever, and you go, so who are they? That'll be important. Yeah, it's not.
Yeah,
we lost interest in them partway through writing Last Jedi, and now they've gone.
Yeah,
you know, like it's gone now.
Yeah, but
I didn't put any jokes in that I just said, John.
No, I liked it though.
I just said something I believed.
Was that written by Craig Daniel?
He dashed that off. No pun intended, and just passed me a note.
And then dashed to have another one off.
He sure did. To Orange Lust 2.
Good for
Return of the Tropical Breeze.
Oh, wonderful. Sensual. So, yeah, they have this big lightsaber fight. Because at this point, Finn's in possession of the lightsaber.
Mm.
And he fights Kylo and gets wiped out immediately, basically.
Mm.
And then there's a nice moment here where Kylo puts his hand towards the saber, saying, "That saber's mine."
Mm.
And as he gets it with the Force, it then shoots past his face.
Bang, straight into Rey's hand.
And that's a great moment.
It's really nice. Mm. Yeah, again, such a lovely kind of... That sort of epic moment of revelation. They do all that stuff so well, and it's kind of they sort of weirdly just can't sort of focus it down enough to like what is the core of it all.
This is where that screenwriter of some infamy has a problem with this scene because his problem was is that there's no way Rey would be able to defeat Kylo Ren.
Right.
But there is kind of...
I think I've just
a...
worked out which screenwriter you're talking about.
Yeah.
I thought, until quite recently, John, I thought we were talking about an abstract concept of...
Oh, right.
A sex offender screenwriter.
No.
Just figured out what you... Yeah, fine. But we'll move on from that.
Yeah. Yeah, because...
That's enough, I might say.
Exactly.
Mm.
And chucked out Mexican. Now, Yes, at the moment, though, which kind of explains it a bit, because she's not like... beating him. She's defending herself. But then when he says, "I can show you about the Force," she then takes that second, doesn't she, to say, "Oh, yeah, the Force," and kind of becomes all one with the Force.
Yeah.
Even though she's not had the training, I guess that's people's problem with that scene. But I don't have a huge problem with that.
I think people go... This is a bit like... Again, it's very like Doctor Who fandom. Is you sort of get... You get people hung up over all the wrong things.
Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, what matters is that, you know, you have this fictional science fiction world. And if you're too concerned about what was established about the way Time Lords work in 1979, you will never be able to enjoy another episode of it. Because... And I often think about how... In Father's Day, the Doctor Who, the New Who episode, which is a brilliant episode, that episode breaks the entire concept of Doctor Who because it's very clearly established that if you go back in time and try and interfere with events that you know are supposed to have happened, like killing Hitler or saving your dad from being hit by a car or anything like that, time pterodactyls will arrive and then consume everything in this aberrant timeline until it's gone.
Right.
And funnily enough... Years later, when Matt Smith is trying to stop the Daleks from infiltrating the British military during World War II, the time pterodactyls are nowhere to be seen. So I think there are things like that that you just sort of have to take on the chin a bit, really.
Yeah.
Especially when you're talking about the ineffable concept of a powerful force that binds all living things. I think there's a certain amount of leeway you've got to give it when there's no way that any force like that could be controlled through incredibly dependable means.
No, absolutely not.
Anyway,
but she basically she George McFlies him. She slices him across the face, which is good.
And
leaves him to dead. And as fate would have it, the ground breaks between them and they're separated, which is a bit on the nose. But never mind. She escapes.
Well, it's a little bit of action writing, I guess. You know, that could be the ship breaking up, or that could be a rope ladder crumbling in a different film. You know, could be anything. True.
She escapes with Chewbacca and Finn, and Rey. Ren is Snoke says to grab him, and we're going to go and complete his training. Which they don't.
No, that's never really brought back, is it?
No, because especially, I mean, my one problem with The Last Jedi, and I like it as a film.
Yeah.
I wish the tit bit wasn't in it. If I'm honest.
Oh, I love that bit.
Do you?
No, okay. I really do. I think. So much of what people hate about that, I think, is way more Star Wars-y than people care to admit.
Right.
I think weird little jokes that seem tonally wrong with strange aliens is like, that may as well be like over the door of Skywalker Ranch. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, weird incongruous moments with comedy alien creatures should be like on all the Star Wars merchandise. Like that phrase. And I think that is like, I really like all that stuff. And maybe I'm insane, but I do. And so does Craig. And you wouldn't tell Craig.
I wouldn't.
He's wrong, would you?
No, I wouldn't.
I love that. Yeah, all right.
All right, Craig.
Get back to your video. Shut the door.
My main problem with it, and it's the same problem I've got with Quantum of Solace, is that why restrict yourself to having it take place immediately
I'm
after the end of the last film?
I that never really gives you much, does it?
Like, no.
it's sort of, you look at another, you look at one of the best sequels of all time, Aliens, and that takes place, you know, millennia afterwards. It's straight away as far as Ripley's concerned.
Yeah.
But the reason that works is because the universe has had generations to change, and they've, you know, now they've colonized LV-426, or is it LV? LV-426, yeah. And all of this. And she's had a, you know, her daughter that she had that she never mentioned. Oh, that's been cut, hasn't it? That's a cut scene. Yeah. Anyway, if you watch the deleted scenes, she had a daughter and she's now grown up and she's somewhere else entirely. Like, all that's really nice.
Yeah.
But, you know, so many films do this, like, it straight away. Halloween 2, the original Halloween 2.
Yep, that's right.
And that's quite fun, but it really is just, like, more of the same, because it's literally, it's the same night, even. It's the same Halloween.
Exactly, yeah.
Like, it's all you can do is just go, yeah, same exact thing.
I just think it restricts you from a writing point of view. I mean, I'm not a writer.
No, I think it is, though. I think it's part of the sort of Netflixization of movies, though. Like, I think that there is a shame. It's a shame that everything... There, I think sort of, and you know, of course, Netflix is an extremely high quality commissioner of brilliant streaming programs who I one day hope to work for.
Yeah.
However, what I would say is that I've started to adopt, and this is not fair, but I've started to adopt the phrase like Netflix-y almost to mean they're so busy holding things back for the next episode or installment or sequel season or whatever that they sort of forget to give you enough to latch onto at the moment.
Yeah.
What was I watching recently that felt a bit like that?
I don't know.
They so expect... You don't know?
No, I wasn't there, sorry.
Well, you've been watching me through my computer for weeks. I mean,
I know.
You're not paying attention.
I like to give you some privacy.
Fine. Well, between 7 and 8pm. I was watching something recently anyway where it was clear that like they were going, okay, so we've got to just hold that back. And at the end of the day, what you end up with is a program where nothing actually happens.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not true of this film. It's not true of Last Jedi either.
No.
But as you say, like a completist training... The Knights of Ren, you have this sort of constant sense of we're keeping all of this from you, but don't worry because you'll be back next year in the cinema or next week on the streaming platform to see what that is.
Mm.
And that's fine. And that's like people have been writing that into things forever as long as there's been serialized anything.
Mm.
But the only issue is when the focus is too much on that and you don't have a satisfying ending.
Yeah.
And I think as a symptom of that as well is going, well, of course, the next film starts immediately where we left off because it isn't actually a film. It's just the very long first episode of this series we're making.
Yeah.
And I think that's a bit of a shame. Again, that's, again, my war on clever and sensible franchise management.
Yeah. War.
War. Yeah, that's another lovely reference to John Hurt's War Doctor.
Yeah.
War. I could have done that better, actually. I've been trying it's very hard to do John Hurt unless you've actually lived as long as him and smoked as many fags.
Mm.
So, but it's that was I could have done that better, I think.
Anyway.
Sorry, moving on.
No, it's good. We're now at the end. With Rey is gonna go off and find Luke. And she goes off and she reaches the island. Not Ibiza.
She reaches the island.
Luke's island, which I think is called something like Snotland or something. I can't remember what it's called.
Snotberg.
It's got a stupid name.
Yeah.
And she hands him
Hawaiian sunset.
Hawaiian sunset. She hands him the lightsaber, and he looks like, oh no.
Yeah.
I mean, he gets no dialogue.
Yep.
It'd be great if he just went, no, I'm not. Because he's so powerful with the Force, he doesn't even have to be told.
Yeah.
Something.
No, he does it with a look. That's what you get with Hamill. He says he does. No, I'm not with a look.
Yeah,
he's amazing.
He is amazing. And
I did the best Joker, by the way, hands down. Anyway.
Yeah, definitely. But we get this weird. I mean, I don't know. It's just me. There's a helicopter shot at the end here, and I just feel like it's very un-Star Wars-y. I think I'm being too picky.
That's a good point, actually. Yeah, it is slightly odd, isn't it?
Yeah.
I wonder if that's a product of previous, you know, era's budget limitations in some ways. Like maybe that's... So. And also the fact that, you know, it was much harder to do a drone shot when there were no drones and you had to actually charter a helicopter.
True.
That's enough!
Yeah.
Anyway. sorry, that was my lawyer who came in to say...
Yeah.
That's enough!
Let's not go there.
Let's not go anywhere near it. But That is strange. I like it though. I love that being the last shot of the film. I like that they're gonna want to give you a tour of all the characters you used to know.
Yeah.
And then they hold back, you know, the guy, your leading man right till the end. I think that's a good decision.
Mm.
Yeah.
I mean, overall it's a fun film.
It is fun. I'll tell you, all the things that I find a bit odd about it were magnified when I watched it last night, as were all the things I really like about it.
Yes.
Like little things, like I remember J.J. Abrams talking about how he'd put sort of little, you know, functioning sort of blank firing mechanisms in the Stormtrooper guns, because he wanted all the laser fights and things to feel really palpable and real. And just stuff like that, and you just go, yeah, everything feels, it's weighty, and this, it's backed up by the sound design, the aesthetic design. It's got that beautiful griminess, like I said, very shiny corridors, very grimy planets. Like that's, it's got all of that going for it. Sound design's amazing, which I think is so key to a Star Wars film.
Yeah.
And again, it's like the thing which is hard to avoid is that it is A New Hope again, just with slightly different characters and slightly different planets involved.
Tom, at this point, I'd usually ask James Bond questions, but it seems redundant.
Well, also, I know nothing about James Bond, John. Yeah. I'm really sorry.
That's all right.
I listen to quite a few Smirch Pods, actually, but generally it tends to be not having seen the film. So I've got a really, really vivid picture of View to a Kill built solely on you talking to Paul Litchfield.
Yeah. Well, it was Fear Eyes Only, but yeah.
Fear Eyes Only. Sorry, pardon me. This is how little I know. Yeah, anyway, so ask me some other questions.
Well, I don't think there's any point.
Oh. Yeah.
What's your favourite Star Wars film, Tom?
Empire Strikes Back.
What's your least favourite Star Wars film?
I don't know. Probably Attack of the Clones. I'm not sure.
Do you think Rian Johnson will ever get to make his trilogy?
I sort of feel like at this point, this is a broader answer. I sort of feel like they're just going to keep promising Star Wars films and entire trilogies to whatever directors are sort of proving themselves to be quite popular, sort of coming from the independent back, you know, circuit, and just keep offering them films that they never then make.
Yeah, I
think
agree.
Taika Waititi's will never be made. I think Rian Johnson's will never be made.
Yeah, I don't think Rian Johnson's one will happen, because it would just be too much effort for the fans moaning about it before
that's
it comes
interesting.
Out.
I always sort of kind of wonder whether if there really is a genuine sort of groundswell of everybody going, oh, this is terrible. Like, you know, like sometimes you get with those big studios, if they release like a real clunker, and it just, it's backed up by the box office and by the reviewers and the sort of fan talk back online. They'll probably go, well, you're not allowed to make another one of these films, or we're going to scrap this franchise or whatever.
Yeah.
But a part of me go, like how they sort of rebooted The Incredible Hulk, because kind of everyone just agreed, like, the Edward Norton one was, like, fine, but not as good as Iron Man, and we're not sure. And then they went, oh, forget it. Like, that never happened, basically. And that's, like, I can see that happening. But when it's kind of mostly kind of a small hardcore of, let's be honest, usually misogynists, but not exclusively, but often it's kind of a very, very vocal, super nerd, self-appointed kind of fan elite who are making the complaints. I always kind of get the impression that they couldn't give a fuck, right? Like, well, as long as it's making bank, surely they don't care.
Well, I agree, but my problem is that the Rise of the Skywalker kind of caters to all those worst kind of people.
Yeah, maybe that's the proof. Maybe that's the proof that they are listening to the knobs.
Yeah, because, well, J.J. Abrams certainly is, because that film is just, it might as well just be a film of J.J. Abrams getting the last Jedi and just sort of pissing on it, essentially. And basically, or just going through the script and going, no, I don't like that. Don't want that. That's not going to be in my film.
Yeah. I mean, I was having this conversation with my fiance, who I've got, because I'm
all right,
a very good-looking
Tom,
boy.
I get it. You've got a fiance.
Very, very attractive.
Yeah.
I was saying, it is very like, the idea I love, again, another thing I loved in The Last Jedi was Rey being told, oh, your parents were just like some shitheels.
Yeah.
Like, they're not important.
I love that.
I thought, brilliant, especially because the whole Star Wars universe is hinges on this idea of the Lost Prince.
Yes.
In Luke Skywalker, and the reveal of a surprise, you know, ancestral line. To unseat that would be such a good idea.
Yeah.
And seemed to be for precisely one film.
And
then from what I hear, that changes slightly.
Well, the next film, he basically does that. When I said your parents were nobody, they were, but
however,
they were Palpatine's kids. So you're a Palpatine,
right? Oh, so they kind of do it both ways then.
Yeah.
Great. Well, I think that trying to have your cake and eat it too always works.
I've not seen that. Is it good?
Yeah, have your cake and eat it too. It's really good.
I've seen the first one.
Craig Daniel as the horny milkman, and it goes uphill from there, basically. Brian Glover comes on at one point and says, that's enough!
Yeah.
It's a cavalcade.
He points at a vagina and says, that's a muff.
That's a muff.
Yeah.
And then he points at Peter Cushing and says, "That's a moth."
So, I'll start again with talking properly. If you were going to make, if you were going to be in charge of the next Star Wars film, who would you get to direct it?
Gosh, that's a very difficult question. Rachel Talalay.
Oh.
Rachel Talalay, because she did such amazing work on Doctor Who that I just think...
She also did Freddy's Dead, The Final Nightmare.
To be fair, yes, she did. And Tank Girl, let's not forget.
Oh, yeah, but, yeah, yeah.
But listen, Heaven Sent makes up for all of that, as far as I'm concerned. Mm. Just because I sort of go, listen, you've worked very hard for a long, long time on lots of various kind of less successful science fiction properties.
Mm.
And, you know, who knows? Maybe television medium suits her better, or maybe... Just she's, you know, her craft has developed over time.
Mm.
But she's certainly done some brilliant work lately, and I just think she deserves a crack at it.
I'd like James Mangold to have a go.
Now, who's that?
He's the guy who did Logan.
Now, yes, that's meant to be great. I haven't seen it. It's great. I remember the old man Logan comics.
Mm.
But, yeah, okay, fair play.
He's very thoughtful and precise, and there was rumours of him doing the new Indiana Jones film.
Mm.
But, yeah, I think he'd be a good fit for this kind of thing.
Here's a question: who would you have write a new Star Wars film? If they weren't the director and writer, they were just the writer.
Mm. God, thing is, I'd say Rian Johnson, just because I loved Knives Out so much.
Yeah, it was good. Yeah,
yeah.
I'd be interested to see if he does ever get to do his film or trilogy or whatever.
Mm.
I'd like to see him untethered from a sort of larger continuity and figure out what is the Star Wars story he'd really want to tell.
Oh,
if he had absolutely no limitations.
I would, actually, just based on the fact that I just watched the Watchmen TV series.
Oh, yeah?
I'd like Damon Lindelof to do something with it, because I know he's a massive Star Wars fan.
Damon Lindelof. Yeah, he could do it.
Yeah.
I think what I'd like is a writer, so a nice writer. Anyone who writes for money. I think we'll get a writer in to write a lovely Star Wars film.
Yeah. Sounds good.
Yeah. Anything else you want to ask me? Or?
No.
No, all right.
That's it. Also, I'd also like, is it Craig Mazin, the guy who did Chernobyl? I'd like
Craig Mazin, yes.
He can have a go as well.
He's amazing.
He is, and he also did the Watchmen podcast with Lindelof, and it's like listening to two really excitable young kids.
Well, if you've not heard the Script Notes podcast, that's like a weekly update on how excited Craig Mazin is about things.
Yes, I'll have to listen to that. Someone told me to listen to that the other day.
Oh, it's very good. It's very, very good. And it's too, you know, they're at the head of top of their game, really, like in terms of, you know, I don't even necessarily mean like how good they are at writing. I just mean like two actual A-list writers.
Hmm.
And you go, wow, like we're hearing, you know, you read William Goldman's books and you go, oh my God, this guy is like, you know, he's one of the top guys out there. Like he's really operating at the top levels of this business in this job. He's like got as high as you can possibly get. And he's written this book, and it's like a document that we have preserving what it was like to be, you know, one of the most popular screenwriters in Hollywood at that time.
Mm.
But with Script Notes, it's like you've got John August, who's writing all like big tentpole Disney films, and Craig Mazin, who's written the most popular TV show in the last 10 years or whatever.
Yeah.
And you go, but we're hearing from them weekly in the moment. Oh, it's quite something.
That's lovely.
It's quite a resource.
Okay, well, I'll give that a listen.
Give it a go.
Tom, thank you so much for so much time.
What an immense pleasure it's been.
It has.
I would have hurried it along if I wasn't enjoying it. So it's testament to how much I've enjoyed it, how long we've been talking.
Wonderful. Well, thank you, Tom. And I'll speak to you soon.
Speak to you soon. Thanks very much, Tom.
Bye. No, it's not. No, it's not. Bye.
Bye, bye, bye. No, it's not. Bye.
Oh, hello you. My name's Tom Price.
Hello, I'm Dave Cribb.
You should come and join us. Every day we do a podcast called Cabin Fever, where we talk to loads of comedians who've had to cancel everything else in their lives, so they come on our podcast instead, don't they, Dave?
Yeah, it's an isolation podcast.
Dave, were you yawning at the start of that sentence then? Was it just a little yawn?
Yeah, it's basically the Great Big Owl isolation podcast. We'll have people on from all our podcasts, from your Rule of Threes, your Brian and Rogers, your Musicals, your Bitchins. If you like any of our podcasts, if you like any of those people, chances are they'll be logging onto the Zoom call and just chatting, because let's face it, they got nothing else to do.
Also, there'll be a quiz on the bill. All right, see you soon. Lots of love.
Cabin FE 83709. Oh, that's our Twitter name.
Great Big Owl.